Hello and welcome to the China Business Brief, a podcast from the China Britain Business Council where we explain the latest news relevant to anyone working in or with the world's second largest economy. I'm Joe Cash, and this week I'm delighted to be joined by Roger Creamers, who is an assistant professor in modern Chinese studies at the University of Leiden and a co-founder of DigiChina, which, if you haven't checked it out already, is the place to go for all things concerning Chinese technology policy. For an episode on how the data legislation that China has incrementally introduced over the last couple of years has developed and how it will likely impact businesses, both Chinese and foreign, in the short-term future. Roger, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Happy to be here.
A quick note to our listeners, I'll include links to the DigiChina site, as well as a previous episode of the China Business Brief, where we discussed the whens and whys of personal information protection law and the data security law below, which, as Roger wrote in an excellent piece for SubChina, also linked below, constitute the twin pillars on which China's data governance architecture rests. But for today's conversation, I plan to focus on the impact of this new cybersecurity legislation on the Chinese economy going forward. So with that in mind, Roger, my first question would be, is this everything now that we've had the 2017 cybersecurity law and last year's personal information protection law and the data security law, is the stage now set and at time for companies in China to begin thinking in terms of how they're going to devise new and innovative ways to advance their company under this new regulatory regime?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that in very many ways, I think we now have the large building blocks for cybersecurity and data protection. We've got those set. But as always in Chinese law, the top level legislation tends to be vague. It tends to contain overarching objectives, basic principles, punitive provisions. But then primarily what it does is it creates mandates that administrative bodies then use to go and formulate implementing regulations. And very often it's those implementing regulations that contain the actual detail, the actual compliance-related standards that businesses need in order to develop their compliance strategy. And in very many cases related to cybersecurity and data protection, these haven't yet been published or they're still in the drafting stage. So while we know the general direction, and that general direction is pretty much set, we don't yet quite know what that's going to mean very specifically for companies. And one example of that is the classification of businesses under the data security regime. Now, that regime foresees three categories of data: core data, important data, and ordinary data. But the question is obviously designation. And what we've seen is that the data security law essentially kicks that ball down to the regulators. And we now have draft regulations, for instance, from MIIT, which then again kicks the can even further down the road towards specific departments or local governments. So unless and until a company sort of kind of knows what or how to categorize the data that it holds, it's really difficult for that company to actually embark on a combined strategy. However, these regulations do contain sort of overarching ideas or overarching standards for data classification. What counts as core data would be data that, if leaked or divulged or damaged, would create grave harm for national security. That gives you some information. It doesn't give you all information. And in a way, that may well be a regulatory technique because you want companies to err on the side of risk aversion rather than playing line balls, as the Chinese expression has it.
I mean, that's certainly something I can sympathize with. At CBBC, we've been working hard chasing down local governments, trying to find out what these various classifications mean. What does important data actually mean? And does that mean the same thing in Shanghai as it means in Beijing, in Guangzhou? And as you said, you know, it is going to be all in the implementation guidelines. But taking this back up to the top, what is the broad strategy now that these regulations are in place? Why has it happened in the last couple of years? And what's the plan for the government going forward now that it has these controls?
Well, it's really interesting to see how this entire approach has evolved. And I think it starts with concepts. When we talk about cybersecurity in the West, by and large, we talk about hacking. We talk about the unauthorized intrusion into network systems by people who have no business being there or who have no permission to be there. Whereas the Chinese conception of cybersecurity from the get-go has been far more informed by a broader conception, which isn't just about hacking, but it is more broadly about all of the harms that can occur to national security, to public interests, and to individual interests through networks. So content control is part of that, but also things like supply chain security, for instance. Not just do you have network equipment that is actually secure, but do you have network equipment and services that you will still have access to for maintenance, upgrade purposes in the next 5 years, for instance. So that definition of cybersecurity is a fair bit broader. That's one area of it. The second aspect of it is that over the years, we've seen regulators, particularly the Cyberspace Administration of China, the CAC, develop a regulatory approach which essentially aims to ensure that all these security-related costs are internalized into the business model. In other words, that you don't have companies who can do whatever in the information space, and it's then up to the government to pay the costs or to deploy the resources to deal with negative externalities, as Beijing would define them. And again, certainly information control is a big one of those, but it's by far not the only one. And so they've come up with this idea, it's called dominant responsibility or 主体责任. And the idea of that is that regulatory frameworks should be deployed so that essentially companies should take the lead in identifying any possible risk that might emerge from their services. And they should have the internal departments, the personnel, the capabilities, the processes in place to ensure that they can effectively manage those risks. And if they don't, there'll be trouble. And that trouble can go as far as cancellation of business licenses. In other words, you can just be kicked out of the market, either for specific period of time or indefinitely. So there is a much stronger sense that businesses should take responsibilities for the consequences of their business models. And if they can't, they shouldn't be in business.
One point I was particularly struck by in your article for SubChina is that the data security law is in fact unique in so much as that no other country has tried to blend social issues with national security, with data governance into one piece of legislation. Is this legislation where actually there's a lot that the rest of the world could learn, but because of concerns about how ideologically charged it is, the EU, the US, the UK might overlook what is actually quite a valuable contribution from China in terms of cyberspace legislation and regulation?
Well, I think there's certainly a point to it where I think we overvalue regime type. Very often in our public discourse, we say there are democratic states and there are non-democratic states. Democratic states are competent, resilient, legitimate, morally superior. Non-democratic states are weak, vulnerable, incompetent, certainly immoral. And everything that authoritarian states do must therefore also be incompetent and aimed at furthering authoritarian goals. And I think that's a bit self-satisfactory. I think that's patting ourselves on the back just a little bit too much. One doesn't have to agree with the answers that China has come up with in response to very difficult questions on how to deal with the online world to recognize that in very many ways, it has been far more audacious in asking those questions in the first place. And when you look at the 14th five-year planning cycle for the digital space, there is a clear idea there. And that idea is very new and very innovative. And there are many, many unknowns. And the Chinese governments are taking quite a big bet. I would think that the execution of that is going to be hugely complex, right? There's going to be many trade-offs that need to be balanced in a system that isn't necessarily well set up to balance complex trade-offs. And there's going to be tons of unintended consequences, as there always will be. But if I were a gambling man, I wouldn't gamble against a considerable degree of success.
Well, we now have you on the record, so good luck. But hopefully you're right. And it does sound like this is legislation that is actually going to come in and, well, it's going to do more good than harm, if anything. Roger, thanks for coming on the podcast. You've made an excellent guest.
Pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode of the China Business Brief. Goodbye. China Business Brief is a podcast brought to you by the China Britain Business Council. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you're subscribed. To find out more about our other events and activities, do check out our website at www.cbbc.org.